Welcome back to the Super Mosier Brothers Show. I'm one of your hosts, Sam Mosier, joined as always by...
Jake Mosier.
Let me do the intro for once. This is a podcast where two brothers and lifelong best friends take their passion of talking about video games away from the family dinner until the microphone. I'm joined by my co-host and brother, Jake Mosier, who I already introduced. Happy New Year!
I guess this will come out on the New Year. As you heard in our last episode, we postponed our watch and listen portion of the end of the podcast because we were running low on time and we thought we'd give you a little Christmas gift. Just want to hop right in?
Yeah, Jake. So last time we talked about Game Watch and Listen, we talked about May December, we talked about Napoleon, I talked about Saltburn.
To cut you off. I don't want to prolong this any longer than it's already going to be, but this is a fun way to go into the future. Because we're not talking about games since we already did in the last episode. What game are you most looking forward to playing over the break?
I am bringing my Switch home. My girlfriend will be with me. So I'm excited to play more Super Mario 3D World. We're very close to beating it. Hopefully I'll get Super Mario Brothers Wonder for Christmas. So we'll hop into that. And then personally, I'm going to bring my Switch home. Or my Steam Deck home, and I think I might buy some indies during the Steam Winter Sale. I'm interested in Chance of Sinnar, Dave the Diver. I also got Venba for like $8. I want to get back to Hi-Fi Rush. So I think there's some Steam Deck stuff I'm going to mess around with. What about you?
I'm very excited for Super Mario Bros. Wonder. Fingers crossed I receive that game as a Christmas gift. And then probably bring my Analog Pocket home. That's, I think, my plan. Yeah.
Well, on our next episode where we recap our 2023 predictions, look forward to our thoughts on everything we played over break.
But back to movies, Sam.
So yeah, on that note, because we're recording this immediately after our last episode, no thoughts on movie. Like, we're definitely seeing Poor Things between now and when this episode's out. Iron Claw. There's also, apparently, I'm being brought to Boy in the Boat, so Jake and I are going to be apart on Christmas. This is the first time ever we're not going to be spending it together. Jake will be with his girlfriend, and so by proxy, we've delayed the normal Mosier family Christmas big celebration to when Jake's in town. So what are we going to do on Christmas instead? We're going to do what many families have done, and I've always partly been curious about, which is go to the movie theater and see a movie. But Jake, of all the years we're doing this, in a year when there's so many great things coming out on Christmas, what are we seeing?
According to Claire, Boys in the Truck.
The Boys in the fucking Boat.
Yesterday, I was on the phone with the family, and Claire goes, I heard about the movie. Claire's like, yeah, we're seeing, like, Boys in the Truck. Not a joke. She, like, thought that was the title. Very funny stuff.
I honestly will try to make even if it's like, I understand saving things for when you're in town, but like, why can't we see The Color Purple? Or like,
would that be out by then?
I think so. I think it's a Christmas Day release.
You know it's a dad movie.
I mean, it is literally the dad movie.
And you can't beat a dad movie. The only opportunity you had was Wonka, and we goofed by seeing it.
Well, it's because there's between this episode and, or between recording and this episode releasing, there's Poor Things, there's Iron Claw, there's American Fiction, there's Aquaman 2, there's Color Purple, there's Boys in the Boat, there's Ferrari.
You could probably convince them on Aquaman 2.
Anyway, who knows what we'll see between now and then. But for now, what we have to discuss, the two big ones are The Boy and the Heron and Leave the World Behind.
And Wonka.
And, oh yeah, we saw Wonka. Where do you want to begin?
Let's start. I'm going to go what I would call top or bottom to top. All good movies. I think they're all worth seeing. Let's start with Wonka.
Yeah.
This is the Timothée Chalamet hidden musical from the director of Paddington.
Hidden musical.
About the rise, not yet fall, just the rise of Willy Wonka himself. It's delightful. The songs aren't the best thing. Timmy isn't the best singer, but it is this. I think it delivers the same quote unquote thrills that Paddington does. It is delightful, makes you smile most of the movie. It brings a level of levity and joy that you just don't get from many movies, and the ones that try often don't do very well. So I like this quite a lot.
Yeah, it reminds me of, again, just an era of movies we don't get anymore, in that it's family friendly, it's live action, it's a musical. It is trying to instill a message and not really do much more than that. And that's what I really liked about it. It was it was charming. It was funny. I liked all of the cast. The chemistry between Chalamet and whoever played Noodle was endearing. I thought the villain characters were funny. Very, like, I mean, literally some, like, twirled mustache, very scenery-chewing stuff. When Timothy's good, he's really good, but there are moments of this movie where I felt like they didn't use his best take, and I'm not even usually, like, one to usually lob that complaint, but there's a certain kind of cornballiness to this take on Wonka that's very hard to nail, and there are parts where I feel like Timothy is knowingly doing it with a bit of a wink, and other times where I think he's trying to do it completely straight face and it doesn't work as well.
I don't disagree with you. My opinion on that is I don't think they nailed the character
that
in the
too.
Writing. And I say that, I think they were consistent enough where I don't think they lean hard enough into the goofy winkiness of him. And so when it does come out, it's like, oh, this is neat, but also very different than how you were 3 minutes ago. It just kind of like, it's like someone has like a hand up his back and they like tickle them. And he's like, oh, I'm going to do one now. And it's like, okay, I don't know. I guess this is kind of your fault because you should be able to ease the transition between the two. But also I give him some slack.
I mean, that's part of the like the hardship of the movie, for lack of a better term, is that Wonka has more edge in the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory story because he's testing these children, whereas here he's just kind of a, like, happy-go-lucky, whimsical magic boy.
I don't think we will get a sequel, but I would not be shocked because this is doing very well at the box office. Not that the next movie will be similar, but I could see a world in which they picked Timmy knowing that the sequel could be a little darker and he could do that fairly well.
I'd be interested to see it.
Sam, let's go next. I would say it is a movie I keep wanting to call the Hulu show, which is, the Hulu show is something at the end of the world.
Oh, Murder at the End of the World.
And this is Leave the World Behind. Not similar, but similar enough. This is the Sam Esmail techno-apocalyptic thriller on Netflix. What did you think?
Now, it's funny. I maybe would have put this before Wonka. I still liked this movie. But, I mean, first of all, starting with the positive, it's fun that we got this movie starring some of our best actors, Julia Roberts, Ethan Hawke, Mahershala Ali, most importantly, is my favorite in this. Mahala? Did I get that?
I don't know how to pronounce her name. M-Y-H-A-L-A.
I think it's Mahala. From our beloved industry, and then Kevin Bacon in a bit of a supporting role. So it's awesome seeing some of our best actors on screen together. They mine a lot of tension from what is like largely like a domestic thriller kind of. And as part of that, what I think works best about this movie as a metaphor or commentary on COVID, bottling those feelings that we had, not knowing what to trust or what information we could believe, or information coming in hot and evolving over time, and this idea of protecting ourselves versus protecting others. What about our life is important when we're faced with societal collapse? Like, I think it gets at all of that really well.
I agree. I was not happily surprised by this movie. I had like medium expectations. I just didn't read much, or I think I watched the trailer like once. I just like Sam Esmail. I like this cast a lot. I especially love, I wrote about my Letterboxd review, I love Mahala from Industry. I think she is an absolutely fucking magnetic actor and just is so interesting in every time she's on screen. But I think it's important to caveat. I watched this movie high, and I think that is important for two reasons. One, it made the tension higher than it probably would have been if I wasn't high, but not in a bad way. I had a great time watching this movie. And then I think more importantly, the lines of dialogue that maybe are a little too on the head, and the themes that maybe on the head, that like stuff didn't bother me at all. Because I think I would still feel this way if I rewatched it. All of that stuff is completely outweighed by the phenomenal performances, and that I think the themes it does tackle, it does really, really well. Even though some of them are on the head, I think it's really we've talked about, at least you and I personally, and I think the larger culture has talked about how hard it will be and has been to make a movie about COVID. And I think this is a really effective way to do that while also tackling a bunch of other issues, both societally and interpersonally, without it being so direct. And then also putting it inside a tight thriller in a type of movie we never get anymore, ever, with set pieces that are simultaneously small and huge, that are bizarre and quite matter of fact. I think all of that is just really hard to do in one cohesive package. Honestly, my biggest detractor, I think the camera work, they didn't quite commit to a style. It kind of wants to be a bunch of things at once. It's a bit distracting, but I really like this. What did you not love about it?
I found it to be a little baggy at points. It is like an hour. It's 140 minutes, which, you know, like Killers of the Flower Moon and Oppenheimer are two of my two favorite movies of the year. So like, it's not just that it's long. Because when it is tight and the tense sequences move, they move, you can feel when it is not as tight. So that's like, that's, you know, a minor complaint. It's just like a bunch of kind of like, so I still largely like this movie, but it's a couple minor things. It's like that. I wish in a movie that's so clearly commenting on our tendency to want to find cause and effect and build conspiracies that it hadn't explained so much that it did by the end.
So it's funny because I know you've listened to the interviews. I fall on a different side of that. I just feel it presented an option with confidence, but by no means said this is what happened. A character had confidence in something, but often in real life, people have confidence in stuff that isn't what actually happened. Which, have you read, like, the differences between the book?
No.
So, funny enough, that's the biggest difference, is the book leaves it even more vague. The book presents a bunch of options, to my knowledge, from what I've read, the book presents a bunch of options, nothing near as specific as what Mahershala says in the car towards the end of the movie. But that moment, and I think SNL said this in one of the interviews, or at least an interview I read online, like, that moment is still supposed to not be, that's not the answer. That is one person's potential guess at what happened. And yes, the movie does maybe give a little more hints to that.
That shot in the bunker at the end where the safety vault is getting, like, broadcasted messages from the White House that in some way seems to confirm at least some parts of Mahershala's monologue. I like you said about the book, I wish they had presented even more options that, like, because I found that to be this way we grasp at straws to try to explain things that are beyond our own understanding.
Another change I thought was interesting in, and maybe you heard this in the interview, in the book, Mahala's character is his wife. It is a, like, 45-year-old black woman, so a drastically different character we get in the movie, which completely changes their relationship and the relationship of everyone involved in the movie, which I thought was a really interesting change. And I think, interestingly, ties better into the COVID aspect as opposed to if you did a relationship that's almost completely opposing slash mirroring the Ethan Hawke and Robert's character.
Yeah. And there's also some, there's some, like, writing things that were a little, like, eye-rolly or underbaked. Like, I didn't feel like I really got a vibe for, like, what Robert's kids were.
I would agree.
And then
one of them was horny.
He was horny, all right. And there was also some, I thought that, like, the COVID conspiracy and general, like, societal, like, mistrust thing was handled well. Some of the handling of, like, our reliance on technology, Hawke's "I'm a useless man" monologue was a little too much for me, as well as Roberts is, like, she had a couple lines, but the one that stuck with me most was when she was talking about how the kids, you know, kind of rolled off and weren't bugged by the ship landing on the beach, and goes, she's like, "It's just like one of their shows. They're just on to the next episode."
I agree. And again, I think I like most of those things, just like glazed over.
I'm being picky.
It's funny though, because while I do agree that those are on the nose, I think the ending is a really good critique and commentary on media and how we treat and value those things, which is really funny that some of them aren't handled the best, but the end is really
good. That's the funny thing is, like, I think netting out, it does all of these things well. I just like, oh man, an editor could have just finely tuned him a little more.
Are we ready for our final movie?
Oof, let's do it.
The Boy and the Heron, Miyazaki's second final movie. Maybe it won't be his final movie, and maybe it will. This is the first animated movie of his, or first movie of his I've seen in theaters. I saw it in IMAX, as did you. You saw it both subbed and dubbed. I saw it subbed. It's fantastic. It's my favorite Miyazaki movie. Get the basic ass shit out of the way. It's gorgeous. The music's phenomenal. It shows you some weird, bizarre shit you've never seen before. It makes you smile. It makes you maybe tear up, maybe not. I disagree with people who say that you need to be familiar with Miyazaki's works beforehand. I think there's a lot to glean from this movie as a new viewer to Miyazaki. I think there's some very universal themes about the work you bring into the world and what you leave behind and what your responsibility is with that. I think there is, I think maybe more, the most universal theme from this is like the real world is hard and it sucks. And often you want to distract yourself in this movie and in Miyazaki's life in a fantasy world, whether that's in creative worlds or just consuming media. But I think this movie does a really good job of tackling all the things while still including the Miyazaki highlights. What did you think?
I love this movie. Like you said, I've seen it twice. Hayao Miyazaki is my favorite director. I think this is in his three best. And that's like, that speaks to the like, this would be many filmmakers' best movie. And the fact that it's, you know, still top three is to the testament of A, how great his filmography is, but also how amazing this movie is. I've seen it twice now. And the first, I agree with you wholeheartedly, even as someone who knows all of his movies pretty intimately, that it works completely on its own as a statement about grief and isolation and choosing to embrace the loved ones around you versus the world inside your own head or shutting yourself off from it, that I was profoundly moved by in the first time seeing it. And then having done some research about the making of the movie, and obviously this being one of Miyazaki's final movies, and depending on how efficient he is with making his next one, maybe it will be his last one. I was equally moved on second viewing this as a metaphor for somebody reckoning with what they owe themselves, what they owe others, the idea of legacy, and whether there is any value in trying to pass something that is yours along to the next generation, or if it's most valuable for them to let it crumble and make something new.
In a year where we got a lot of movies about filmmakers doing meta commentary on their own lives, I would argue this is the most interesting, as it is a dude who said, I'm done, contemplating the last years of his life, decided, actually, I'm gonna go back in, and then made a movie about like going back in one last time. And it's funny that I think the ending will ultimately be contradictory to the choice he makes in real life. But it's interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, and I think like it's maybe not just a message, or it, I think ultimately it's not a message for him, it's a message for others of like, I can do what I want, I will be the man who stays behind in this dream world, but I want you to go out and do your own thing. Like,
yeah, it's great. It's a very, very good, and even if like none of the things we said sound interesting to you, it's a visual delight. It's got any like screen cap you see of any Ghibli movie, has all of those things. I think it is fundamentally enjoyable on that level as well.
Great voice acting in both ends. I do prefer the sub to the dub. There are a couple translation changes in the English version, or the English language version, that I think lessen how hard the emotional moments hit, specifically commenting on some of the grief stuff and the mother-son relationship that is so often seen or in some ways intentionally absent from Miyazaki's works. But then like you said, also just all the bird stuff is really funny or really moving. I don't know. It's such a dense movie. Like, I can't wait to keep rewatching it. And the last but not least, just the parakeets are the best. And they're funny. So funny.
It's a delightful movie. Moving on to TV. We already talked about Scavengers Reign in Fargo. I really just have one quick update. Slow Horses season 3 is fantastic. Maybe even better than the first season, which I also think is great. This is one of the best shows on TV right now, and is one of the few who has managed to straddle the line between old TV and new TV, and I wish more people would take a method like this.
I'm watching, still watching, Gen V, Mrs. Davis. I've added Dead Ringers and Fargo. Jake, per your recommendation, Dead Ringers rules, but I'm only like 2 to 3 episodes into all of these, so I'll keep my thoughts until I finish them. Have you finished the Invincible run?
Yes.
I did finish that.
It's excellent.
What did you think?
This show's great. I cannot wait to watch more. I think they, honestly, fairly, kind of similar to the horses, I think they are doing the old model of TV very well, doing, which I know that it's just based off the comic book, but is doing the, here's a hint at what, like, you is driving the plot, but doing the story of the week very, very well in an entertaining way.
It's so hard for me to separate my knowledge of the comic from the show, so I really do value people's opinions who are going into this blind, because I'm like, oh, I can't believe they changed that, or oh, I can't believe they truncated that.
Yeah, it's great.
It is fun watching it. Yeah.
Ready for music?
Jake, what have you been listening to?
Not necessarily, this isn't recent, but I listened to it a while ago, saw it a bunch of end of year lists, and felt the need to shout it out. That is New Jeans EP Get Up. Probably me and my girlfriend's favorite album of the year. We listen to it in the car all the time. It is really, really refined, concise, just electric pop music. They write fantastic hooks to go along with pulsing production that is just, it is catchy as fuck. Probably some of the catchiest music of the last 2 to 3 years I've listened to. It's very fun. Next, Sam suggested this, the Guy Scavera plus, I'm just going to say Goyard album. Very, very good. Some of my favorite songs of the year. Anything, I've said this 100 times in the podcast, anything with a gospel soul production or gospel soul sample production and rap songs is going to easily sell me. And this album does a lot of that, and it's all great. So like that quite a lot. And then Blue had a new album with some artist called Knots called Africa. Really, really good stuff. A lot of, like, lyrics about a lot of stuff I don't know shit about, but it was really good. Great production, just some really insightful electric shit. So really into that.
I did not know that came out. Did you listen to Blue's other project this year with Real Bad Man?
Yes, I did. I liked, honestly, this one more, but I did like the Real Bad Man project as well.
So I've been doing, as I do every time this year, a lot of catching up and building of my best music list. So just a couple rapid-fire recommendations going off what Jake just said. I really like Blue's project with producer Real Bad Man. It's called Bad News. It's short, but what's there is great. And just he's just one of the most consistent rappers working right now, and I wish he got more attention. Other underrated rappers I wish got more attention, Wiki's project with producer Tony Seltzer I think is excellent. Great production, thoughtful rhymes, classy, like, kind of luxurious beats. I would check it out. I think it's one of the more overlooked projects of the year. One of the more fun rap projects I would recommend in this kind of trilogy of rap recommendations is Baby Tate's Sexploration, the musical EP. This just is a really fun slice of pop, rap, trap, R&B, all tackling different aspects of sexuality and flirtatiousness and, you know, braggadocia. That's just really fun. My favorite song is the first song. It's called Love Everybody, a bisexual anthem of the year. Then, honestly, my biggest recommendation of the week, now working down from that, is Anna Frango Electricos. This is my favorite list in the last couple weeks. I won't attempt it. She's a Brazilian pop artist. You can find the name of the album in the description. This is just great funk, soul, hip hop. It's a bunch of genre fusions together made into something that feels very almost timeless, because it's also incorporating elements of classic folk in it. It's got great grooves to it. I would recommend anybody give it a shot. It's good for working or for working out. Yeah. Jake, one I do want to pass along to you. Have you listened to Underscores?
So I have this, like, added to my library, and I've probably listened to a few songs, and I liked it. I didn't love it, so I haven't gone back to listen to it, but I do need to give it more of a real shot.
It's a concept album about growing up in the Midwest and also reckoning with childhood trauma. The artist Underscores, she's a trans woman. She's talking about coming to terms with her own identity, her body, abuse that happened to her as a kid, but it's wrapped in all of these different pop stylings, many tracks that are just straight up like hyper pop. There's a song that sounds like a Kesha track from the late 2000s. There's some Gex kind of sounds in there. I'll send my favorite songs over you to it. Admittedly, I feel like often music is best enjoyed when you know the context of it. And knowing that going in, I got a lot out of the lyrics of it. Not to mention a lot of songs are just really catchy. And then two final ones, Bet Cover. They're a jazz rock band. I'm not sure what country they hail from, but this was great work music, also just writing music. The grooves are good, and just the progression on some of the songs are super interesting. They're a band hailing from
Tokyo, Japan.
Thank you, Jake. And last but not least, I finally got around to the new Choice of On album. It's inconsistent, but when the dance songs hit, the dance songs hit.
Not a fan of dance songs, but I'm glad you liked it. That has been the biggest trend in pop music that has been so disappointing.
Man, that's rough for you.
I just do not enjoy, or I don't vibe with most dance music. Like, I liked Renaissance, didn't love it. It's not something I enjoy working to. It's not something I enjoy listening to the car to. It's not because I don't enjoy dancing. I think I would enjoy it most in a club. I'm not in a club very often. So, alas.
Alas. Any other recommendations, Jake?
No, that's it.
What movie are you most excited to see while we're on break?
I'm probably torn between... Ferrari is the thing I'm most excited for. I'm also very excited for Poor Things. What about you?
I think Poor Things is top of my list, but after I saw the American Fiction trailer...
Oh, shit, I forgot about that. Honestly, that might be number one, then Ferrari.
I feel like my answer has to be Poor Things because... It's one of my favorite actresses, Emma Stone, and The Favorite is so good, so Yorgos Lanthimos has my trust. But kind of personally, I'm just most excited to see American Fiction.
It should be a good time. That's it. Yeah. That has been... Do you want to do the outro this time, too?
Oh, my gosh. Let's try it. That has been the Super Mojo Brothers Show. We hope you have enjoyed the episode. Shout out to Mitski Cuera for the podcast artwork. Love you and miss you, Mimi. and shout out to Thomniverse Remix for the music. Send any comments, questions, or concerns to our email, supermojobrothershow@gmail.com, or our Twitter account, @supermojobros. What did you... watch, listen, play over break. Let us know. We'll talk about it next week. Most importantly, subscribe and leave us a review. We would really, really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the day. We'll be back next week with our 2023 prediction recap and break summary episode. But until then, we love you. Be kind, jump up, and be a goddamn superstar.
Good morning, after. I can't do it. I don't... I can't. We'll practice. We'll practice. Yeah, we gave it a try.